Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and when I see a Dear Jane quilt, I get super, super excited. It doesn't matter sort of what it is. I love it. And recently I saw a version that's going on that is incredible. It's colored in this amazing way. So I had to find out who was behind this. And it's a huge, huge community effort. So I have Kim Caskell on here, and she's going to explain the whole Share Jane to me. Hi. How are you, Kim?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am wonderful. I can't tell you how excited I was when you said yes, you'd come on and talk to me. It's like, yay, we get to find out.
Well, we're pretty excited about this project too, that's for sure.
Well, first tell me a little bit about your background, you know, what you do in the world of quilting.
Yeah, well, I have lots of irons in the fire. I've been quilting for about 25 years. I teach many classes all over the world, actually, which I love. I have a long arm quilting business, and that allows me a creative outlet every day. And I'm also the co-host of Celtic Quilt Tours. And Debbie Cagney of Houston, Texas, and I, we offer quilting tours to Ireland and Scotland. And of course, this year we're going to Alsace, France in September.
You know, I just love that you are doing all these different things. I think that that's so fun.
Anything quilty. Anything
right?
Quilty.
You're my kind of girl. So when you and Jelte Van Essen, met, started this concept of a Dear Jane together, you know, how did you two get connected? Because she's a shop owner.
Yeah, she is a shop owner in Holland, actually, in a little town called Deventer in the Netherlands. And she and a group of quilters came over to Killarney, Ireland in 2014 and met up with us and our tour and a bunch of other quilters that were in town. They were from all over the world. And we had a little evening event called the International Gathering of the Guild. And we met up with just a wonderful group of people. And Jelte was very enthusiastic with her group of ladies, and that's where we met.
So did the two of you sort of like click? You know how that happens sometimes. You meet somebody.
Yes, absolutely. She's a real go-getter, and absolutely, we did.
Yeah, I think that's how those kind of friendships start. I mean, you get like you find you're on the same level with stuff, and then from there, everything happens. So you know, both of you have been involved in Dear Jane projects. Is that right?
Yes, over the years, definitely. I had a Dear Jane club probably about 8 or 10 years ago here in Edmonton. I'm from Canada, and she's been doing Dear Jane quilts with her group of ladies over in the Netherlands for years and years, probably at least 10 years as well. And all of that just led her to organize and present an exhibition in the Netherlands this last September. There was an exhibit of over 30 Dear Jane quilts in a big quilt festival over there. And it was just wonderful. And she invited me to come over and give a little lecture and a little presentation on Dear Jane quilts in Canada. And that's how our connection happened.
You know, I saw photos of that exhibit. I mean, for someone who loves that type of work, it just was mind-blowing. How was it in person?
Oh, it was even more mind-blowing, more mind-blowing to see these full-size Dear Jane quilts. Dear Jane quilts are about 80 by 80 square, and they were just gorgeous. And to see them all in the venue of this big synagogue church venue, it was unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable.
You know, I'm one of those people that has had a Dear Jane in progress for, you know, like 25 years. You know, I took a workshop with Brenda Papadakis in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania,
yes,
with my mother-in-law, and we didn't really know what we were getting into. they just are very intriguing. For those who don't know what a Dear Jane is, it's from an antique quilt,
mm-hmm.
and and there are people all over the world who love making these little blocks, and mm-hmm. they're gorgeous. Now, when you two went to France together, that mm-hmm. was a long drive. You tell me that you had a little time to scheme things up on this drive.
Yes, well, she, when after the quilt festival finished, she turned to me and said to me in her very broken English, said, "You like to go to France?" And I thought, sure, one day I would love to go to France. And she said, no, we go now. And so we drove from the Netherlands to France. It was about a 6-hour drive and, through absolutely beautiful countryside. So we had lots of time to chat and we decided we wanted to make a Dear Jane quilt between the two of us, to sort of commemorate our friendship and the success of her quilt exhibit, her quilt show and so on. And, that's where the little idea or the seed was planted. And then when we got to Patchwork Europe in France, she met with her Moda fabric reps at Rhinetex, and they were anxious to hear all about her Dear Jane quilt exhibit that we had just finished. Mm-hmm. And by this time, Rhinetex and the organizers of Patchwork Europe were very excited about perhaps having a Dear Jane exhibit at Patchwork Europe in 2016. And they asked us to organize and to host that exhibit. And, of course, we just jumped at the chance. We thought, wow, what an honor that is. Mm-hmm. And, so then we decided, well, we've got to get our quilt done. We're going to call it Share Jane. And we decided we're going to make this more of a world platform and put the call out to block makers around the world. And, we set up a little Facebook page. And in a matter of a week, I think we had, we had all the blocks that were spoken for to be made. Yelta is looking after the top half of the quilt, and I'm looking after the bottom half of the quilt. And together we've got quilters from all over the world that have participated in this. It's just overwhelming. Just wonderful. Just wonderful.
I know the concept of having a lot of people involved, that community building speaks to mm-hmm. my heart so much. I mean, yeah. I love that part of it. Have yeah. either of you done a quilt before where you had a call for blocks from people you don't even know?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, I think most quilters have been involved in a group quilt on some level. Mm-hmm. Certainly not like this. Yelta has done a K-facet, all done in K-facet fabrics group quilt, a Dear Jane quilt as well, and she has such success with that. You know, she knew that this could fly. This could absolutely fly. So we just jumped at it. And yeah, it's just been incredible. Just the comments that we've had and the participation and the enthusiasm. And it's really, like you say, heartwarming, very heartwarming.
So tell me a few the details, like tell me the fabric line you're using, who did the layout, and can people purchase the layout, the coloration?
Yeah. Yeah, so when we were in France, of course, we were very excited about this. This was all coming very fast, very, very fast. And so we worked with that and worked on a layout that was, based on a regular Dear Jane layout with a trip around the world kind of a setting. And then we wanted to include something a little different, and we put in those combined hearts or a double heart motif in it. We are using a line of fabric called the Wordsmith by Janice Clare. It's a new line of fabric for Moda, and it's going to be available in February or March. And they, of course, jumped at the chance for us to use some of their fabric as well. And we definitely will be putting kits together, and it will include the layout, which, of course, will follow Brenda Papadakis' book, that has all the block patterns and so on. But the exact replica will be available either here in Edmonton at Earthly Goods or through Yelta's quilt shop, 100 Roses Quilt Shop in the Netherlands.
Oh, good. So people can mm-hmm. get the coloration guide. And there's also, for those who like to use electric quilt, there's a program there for.
Yes, that's right. There's software. There's a Dear Jane software, and it can be used in EQ7 as well. And absolutely. It's a little more high tech than just the book.
Well, some people like that because some blocks, paper piecing is good.
Yeah.
And that kind of a thing.
Right.
So there's actually multiples of these being made, right?
Yes. So Yelta and I, together, we're making a total of 3 identical share jane quilts, so the same layout, same fabric, and so on. One will be used here in Canada, North America, and one will be used in Europe. And, of course, both of those quilts will be hung at the quilt festival in France, in Alsace, France, at Patchwork Europe in September. Mm-hmm. And then the third one, we're actually dubbing that one Slow Jane, Slow Share Jane, because it's going to be all hand-teeped and hand-quilted. And, it's a little slower version than ours.
Oh, my goodness. You know, the layout is what really caught my eye. Mm-hmm. You both did an extraordinary job. I'm a very big fan of hearts. I can't, you know, there's never a heart I don't like. So, you know, that's the part that was so cool.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, just a little different twist on the traditional, the original one obviously is done in Civil War fabric. Mm-hmm. But we just wanted something a little fresher, a little bit different, but still in keeping with the Dear Jane, inspired by the Dear Jane quilt. So, we're very excited about this project.
And the neat part is that because of the coloration, in order to get the sort of secondary image, be like doing a trip around the world coloration, you know, that kind of a thing, you have to actually color some of the blocks half and half.
That's been fun to get that heart shape. You're right. Some of the blocks have only a portion of it is using the very dark, it's called ink, so very dark, almost indigo blue kind of fabric. And then the other half or the other part of the block is just using some of the regular fabric line. And placement is all very important, especially when you're paper piecing, because, of course, you're doing a mirror image.
Right, right. A little brain test there, you know.
That's right.
Well, Kim, this has been just extraordinary. I'm just so excited. Give the name of the Facebook page so people can start following along.
Yeah, it's Share Jane. So S-H-A-R-E, Share Jane. And we've got all kinds of photos. I'm just in the process of collecting all of the blocks, and I have them up on the design wall at the moment. So I'm just getting ready to start assembling them so people can follow along and watch my progress. I'll be posting all kinds of photos as I go along. So
fabulous. Thank you, Kim. Mm-hmm. This has been wonderful.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back after the break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm Pat Sloan. And to visit the Dear Jane organizers, you can go to kimkaskey.com and check out her website and quiltwebshop.nl to get to Yelta's site. Now, I am another big fan of, scrap quilts. You can't have enough ideas for scrap quilts. And when I've been following Tanya Alexander's work in American Patchwork and Quilting magazines and the Quilts and More magazines, I've just really been drawn to her projects. And so I had a chance to meet her in the fall, and she's here today to talk about her book, Stash Lab. So hi, Tanya.
Hi, Pat.
Now, you told me you were kind of an accidental quilter. So how did that happen to you?
Yeah, I actually am. But by the way, Happy New Year, and thank you so much for having me here today. I'm pleased to be here. You know, I didn't really start out to be a quilter. I started out to make a quilt for a home deck project, actually, for my daughter's room. And I really... I had quilters in my life, but I didn't see myself that way. I just thought I was making a bedspread, basically, and I was going to be done with it. But what I didn't realize was how much I was really going to love that process, and even more so how much I was going to love fabric and scraps. And when I was done with that project, I actually had fabric left over, so I had the beginning of my stash right there.
Well, there you go. You know, it has to start somewhere, doesn't it? You know?
That's right. That's
now,
right.
you are a regular contributor to American Patchwork's family of magazines. And just very recently, your quilt was on the cover of Quilts and More for the winter 2015, the flannel quilt with the stars.
That's Star Shuffle. Yep, that's out now, I believe.
Yeah, so I really like that one. People recognize it. Another one that you've done Wacky Jack, which is a one that people can actually find at allpeoplequilt.com, find the pattern there. Can you describe that one? Because that looks
Absolutely.
Like a scrap one.
Yeah, it was so fun. And actually, I think that might have been one of my earlier projects for American Patchwork and Quilting, and it was actually my first cover, so it was an exciting quilt for me. But Wacky Jack was so fun because I really, I had actually won a fat quarter bundle of some novelty Halloween prints and at a guild meeting or something like that, and really had no idea what to do with those. And so that project just kind of grew out of those fabrics and trying to figure out, a fun way to play with those. And so... it's based on a quarter square or a quarter log cabin block, basically. And I did foundation piecing on muslin, which was very easy, flip and sew method. And I started out that I was going to do that as a kind of a small project, but I enjoyed it so much. I just kept going and going and going, and it got really big. So, but yeah, that's a really fun one. And I believe that was in October of 2013 is where that one's found.
Yeah, and actually you have a link to it on your sidebar of your website, iCandyQuilts.blogspot.com, so people
yes.
can get a link there, or just put it in allpeoplequilt.com and put a Wacky Jack.
So, yeah, and I think they did a different version too, like a harvest mm-hmm. version, so not mm-hmm. quite so Halloween-y, and it was just mm-hmm. more toned down, muted, and I believe that pattern is available online as well on the APQ site.
Yeah, it's nice to see the other options for people.
It sure is.
So let's talk scraps now, because, we all have them. Some people have a lot. Some some people love them. Some people don't know what the heck to do with them. So for you, did you start out loving them, or did that develop later?
You know, I would have to say I started out and didn't even know that how much I loved them. That home deck project that I was talking about, my daughter's quilt, for her room, I kind of wanted a vintage, scrappy kind of look for her bed. And so the first quilt I even made was an older Atkinson Design fabric or pattern called Yellow Brick Road, which mm-hmm. is very popular, and I think I still see it in shops and stuff, but it's very scrappy. And so my very first quilt was an extremely scrappy quilt, and I really... have never varied much from that. So that's been my true love right from the outset, even though I didn't plan to.
You didn't even know it. You were a quilter and a scrap quilter. You didn't even
Who
know
knew?
That was going to happen. Yeah.
That's just, right. Who knew?
Just blindsided you one day. You were like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But I haven't looked back. I've loved every minute of it, and I just continue to love it more and more. So no surprise there.
So your whole book is Simple Solutions for Scrap Quilts. So tell me what your... base, and the book's called Stash Lab. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the base of how you handle managing your scraps.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the theme of the book is kind of, Stash Lab, thinking of labs as a place of scientific labs as a place for experimentation. You know, in my day job, I work in a science and engineering college, so I'm surrounded by a lot of scientists that have their research and teaching labs spaces and that kind of thing. And so the inspiration really came from that. And when I look at my own sewing room and also the way I like to work with scraps and fabrics and the stash that's on my shelves, I really think of it as a place of experimentation. And so that's kind of where that theme evolved into the book. And so the book is really broken down into three different equations or really just general principles of working with scraps and stash and kind of how to look at them and formulate plans for them and some simple solutions, really, to making them work together. So that's really the focus of the book and the projects in the book as well.
You know, the quilt in this book that just, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the answer. You know,
oh, which one is that?
Yeah, this is my answer. It's called Loose Change.
Oh, okay.
And the reason why it's my particular answer when I saw it is because you put just a top and a bottom border of the same, like a feature fabric, and then mm-hmm. the scrappy part is the rest of the quilt. But I liked that it was asymmetrical because that speaks to me, and that I could use some sort of piece of fabric I don't have much of.
Well, you know, that is so often the case when you're dealing with stash fabric. I know it, at least it is for me. Sometimes you'll go and you'll find the perfect thing in your stash, but it, depending on how long it's been there and on the shelves and when you found it and how long you've loved it and, you know, not wanted to use it, you may not have as much as you would like, you know, when you want to go to use it. And so that's really interesting that you like that quilt so much, because the original plan for that quilt did not include borders at all. And I was actually done with the center, and then I pulled that piece out of my stash, and I thought, oh, this would be perfect for borders, but I don't have enough, because, you know, traditionally we're told that all quilts have to have four borders. Mm-hmm. And I kind of looked at that, and I would think, you know, that's not really true. I can just, it's my quilt. I can put two borders on it if I want to. And that's how much fabric I had, and I tried it, and I loved it that way. So there you go. And so actually I repeated that same concept, and I think three of the different projects in the book only have two borders. But once I kind of got over that little mental hurdle in my own mind that there's a rule that doesn't necessarily have to be followed, that I could do my own thing and be happy with the result. And so that's why that has that way. So yeah,
well,
I'm glad you like it.
It is. It's on my list now because I have a couple pieces like that that I'm like, okay, now I can do something with them and enjoy them. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's hard too when you're shopping for a stash or shopping for a project, or you just, you know, you buy a fabric that you really love, but you just don't know how much to buy. And so sometimes you may have only picked up a half a yard or something. Mm-hmm. And just when you finally get down the road to actually want to use it, you don't have maybe not as much as you would have liked. So it's a good option for that for sure.
So what is your favorite? I mean, do you cut your scraps up to manage them? And if you do, what is your favorite size?
You know, I sure do. And only because, you know, I don't know, probably like a lot of people, my scraps, they are seemingly out of control, because the more quilts I make, the more scraps I generate. And for me, I just find that if they all go in a big bucket, I'm very unlikely to use them. So if I actually cut them down as I'm using them, as they're being generated, but cut them into usable sizes and feature sizes that I actually frequently like to use, and then put them in bins that way, they're much more easily accessible, and I'll look at them and consider them for projects that before, if they would just get lost in the big bin and just wouldn't get used. So I have a couple go-to sizes that I for sure always cut down to. So when I cut a project and then I have that little bit of fabric left over, you know, instead of just folding up that kind of weird size piece that might be left, I try to cut it down to the largest, most favorable piece, whether it's a strip size. So for me, my favorite strip sizes are probably 1.5-inch wide strips or 2.5-inch wide strips. Love those. And with the 2.5-inch wide strips, I use those a lot of times for scrappy bindings and stuff. So my bindings, I almost always cut to 2.5-inch wide. That way, I always have that flexibility to use or not use those strips at all. Mm-hmm. Love 1.5-inch wide strips. I cut down to nice usable square sizes, like 2.5 or 3-inch squares. Charm squares are great. I love that. And then, of course, you know, fat quarters and up as well.
Yeah.
Yes, but I just find if they're, big, you know, pieces. if they're cut and they're ready and they're visible, I'm much more likely to use them than if I just, you know, toss them in a bucket of really random shaped stuff. Yeah.
They also take up less room.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I surprised myself a few years back when I was like, cut them down. I'm like, holy cow, I have like all this space in that bin now.
That's right. And what I found is if I have a labeled bin for them already waiting, it's easier to just add to the existing bin than it is to, you know, have that intermediary step of a big pile on the floor or whatever. If there's a place for it and I have an extra charm square or there's a waiting place to toss it, I find it very helpful. So, you know,
and
that would be another tip.
A really nice box type thing with your edges that you made. We have about a minute. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, absolutely. That was a really fun project. I think you're talking about the one with the selvages and the hat boxes.
Yeah.
Is that it? Yeah. So I love selvages. I have a hard time, you know, just as much as I love scraps, I love selvages, and I have a hard time throwing those away too. So I have, of course, a collection of those, and I had picked up just some old, you know, those brown hat boxes. They're just plain. I actually picked them up at a garage sale, a set of three of the stacking round ones. And so in looking at my selvages, I whipped those out in a, you know, some Mod Podge and just created some nice storage bins that conceal, you know, whatever I want to put in them. And I think I added some little chalkboard sticker labels so I could change what I put in there. But I use one for charm squares. I use one for, you know, fat quarters or maybe some novelty prints of a project going on. But it was an easy project, cute, fun, and actually no sewing involved in that one either. So
it's always fun to get some Mod Podge out, you know, because you
it
know.
Really is. It really is. It's kind of cathartic. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just creativity in a different way. So
it is. The funny thing is I pulled out all my selvages to do that, and I thought, oh, I'm using up so many of these selvages. It's just great. And the, I don't know, it sure didn't seem that. After I tried to put them all away, the pile didn't go down very much, but the boxes sure turned out cute. So I have
those
to look at.
This has been so much fun.
Oh, thank you, Pat. It's been, wow, and fast, too. That's a fast
I know. It's
few
always
minutes,
fast.
Isn't it?
Well, thank
my, you absolutely
for being
my
here.
Pleasure.
We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and this show is brought to you by Moda Fabrics. You can visit the Moda Bake Shop or Moda.com and find all kinds of cool things, neat downloads, free patterns. It's exciting fun to go look out there anyway. So I have next someone whose work is just like, oh, this is so cool, really, really cool. So I'm glad that Terry Tope is here to talk to me about her quilted portraits. She's an author, a designer, a teacher, an award-winning quilter. So, hi, Terry. How are you?
Hello from cold Ohio.
Oh, gosh. Okay, this is cold Virginia. Maybe you're colder than me. But
oh, we have snow today. How about
oh,
you?
Oh, yeah. You win. You win. I have sun, no snow. So, Terry, you told me you've been quilting a little while, that you started in the 80s. How did you get started?
Well, a pregnancy of all things. Now, they put me on bed rest for my oldest child, and back then there was no MTV, there was no cable. There were three channels on the TV that we pulled into the bedroom for me. My mother-in-law gave me a wonderful box of chintz fabric samples, and I had a Better Homes and Garden book, quilt book, and that was my first quilt.
How neat is that? Yes.
Isn't that crazy?
I know. Isn't it crazy what we'll do when we have to keep ourselves busy? You know, It's like,
well, I think I've always sewn. So it's kind of one of those things that, you know, needle in hand.
So what, you know, it's changed a lot. You continued then. You didn't like take a break. You kind of got in.
This is exactly true. I was just having a conversation about this the other day, and I think back in the 80s, we were cutting things out with cardboard templates and shears, which I think pushed me into my love for applique really quick. But these days, there's so many wonderful rulers, and you know, you've got Creative Grids, you've got Jaybird. They're coming up with the wonderful shapes that make it so much easier to make the piece quilt. So huge difference between then and now.
Yeah. I think it's more fun now, actually. I mean, I didn't start quite
so
that early.
Oh, so much more freeing.
Yeah. That's just, you know, you get the right tools, it just makes it all go zipping along really quick. What do you like most, I mean, you, about being a quilt maker? Because you obviously love it enough to teach and to write books and exhibit your quilts.
You know, the process. When I finish a quilt, it's like losing a good friend because you've spent an inordinate amount of time with that project. And at the very end, it's like, oh, now what do I have to do? I have to start all over again. There is no happier place than being with a needle in hand or in front of that sewing machine. So the best part is that the second, close second is the students, because you can't not be amazed and encouraged and inspired by the people that you sit and sew with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love kind of like community sewing, whether it's in a classroom,
or
the guild, or your buddies. Yeah. So let's talk about your book. It's called The Quilted Portrait Book. And when I looked at this, I'm like, wow, because
it's pretty cool.
It is very cool. So explain your quilts in here, these quilts.
It starts out with a great image. And everybody has that family photo that you will reflect back on or that you remember from a childhood flipping through the books. I had one such photo, which was all three of my daughters happy at the same time. When you have multiple children, that's usually a great photo to get them all happy at the same time. And one probably cold winter afternoon, I sat down and decided I was going to try to reproduce this in thread. And during my class, it's funny because I have the first three quilts. And if you were to see the very first quilt that I made, everyone says, oh, that is amazing. But then as you see the progress and how I learned from my mistakes to slowly kind of perfect it, it's also kind of cool. And I also say, and I just kind of made you not like that first quilt, didn't I? Never point out the things you did wrong.
Well, the quilts themselves are basically black and white.
You know what? Everybody else has done color. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of thread portraits out there using amazing amounts of thread. That snowy, rainy afternoon, I had nothing but black thread. I didn't have the amazing amount of thread I have now when I started then. And it was, you know, I think it's kind of cool to concentrate on the shadowing of the face and how you get the contour. With black thread and creating the kind of light mediums and darks and see that produce and kind of become dimensional just by adding extra thread.
You know, so that's the part that's amazing. And your book has some really nice close-ups so that you can understand. You know, you did an excellent job, Terry. You really...
Thank you. I'm tickled to death with it. It turned out beautiful. And I have a lot of people that ask me, you know, do I have to be an accomplished free motion quilter to be able to do this? And I have had beginners in class. I tend to tell them it's like doing etch-a-sketch with your sewing machine. Because if you notice the stitches in the book, they're all top to bottom. There isn't a lot of sideways movement, which is a lot easier because we all have trained our eye-hand coordination to sew up and to sew back. And so
good
I kind of took out Yeah, I took out that weird sideways, and it tends to, by the time you're done, you know your sewing machine so well that the free motion will come easier later.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me, are you doing this, you're doing these on domestic machines, on your regular sewing machines?
I am, yep, yeah. I'm doing it on my home sewing machine.
Yeah, will you be putting, do you have to put it in a hoop, or, you know, have you done it both ways?
The first one that I made, I actually didn't put in a hoop, and I tossed it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I made it too small, and I didn't use a hoop, and I didn't use a stabilizer on the back. I didn't like the results I was getting, so I put a stabilizer on, and then I didn't like the results I was getting, so I did put it in a hoop. The first hoop that I used was a 7-inch spring tension hoop, a little bit different than the wooden craft hoops that we have, because it actually has an indentation where the top part of the hoop pops down inside, and you get awesome tension that way.
You know, that's something that I think a lot of us haven't experimented much with. I mean, I know I haven't. I don't do a lot of machine embroidery, so I haven't really played with the hoop. But I can see how you really need that firmness, right, to keep it, your stitches.
Yeah,
good.
And it gives you a safe place to put your hands to move that hoop up and down.
Yeah.
So you get kind of into this groove, and I tell people it's kind of hard to stop.
Yeah.
So this quilt is done.
So do we need like a big cone of black thread to do this? Because,
you know, I originally started out with the Superior King Tut cones. Now I'm loving the 40 weight RFL, which is new since the book has been produced, because I can get in on a little bit smaller spool. Although I'm also using the same thing in my bobbin. So,
right.
You know, we all know that if we fill 3 or 4 bobbins, that whole spool's gone. So depending on how heavy your concentration of thread is, a cone is a good idea.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking. You know, you just get, your black's usable. You could use black other places if you don't use it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I wanted to explain to people is that the image is, you've traced it, and then the up and down free motion thread lines are creating or filling in. You're like a coloring book in a way, right?
Yeah. It starts out as a photograph. Mm-hmm. And we enlarge the photograph on your home computer. You can do it even in the program with your iPhone photograph. You play around with the brightness. You want to change it to grayscale, black and white grayscale. Play around with the contrast and the brightness so that you get some really good shadows. And then those are easy on a light box to draw on top of the fabric with a blue water-soluble pen. Then it's simply figuring out what your light, medium, and dark areas are so that you can put the concentration of thread within what you've drawn. So it's kind of paint by number with thread. Mm-hmm. Simplified.
Yes. Yeah. So
they turn out looking like pen and ink.
Right, they do. I mean, they're just incredible. They're really quite mind-blowing. It's like, wow.
I've had so many people say, do you have a computer that have an embroidery machine that does that?
Now, when you're working on this, do you need to like take a photo of it to look at it every so often, or put it up on your design wall so that
because we made an enlargement. Mm-hmm. I actually tape that enlargement in front of me, because I'll get lost in the middle of the project as to what the lines mean. And so the blue lines that I've drawn on with the blue water soluble pen that I've drawn all over the top kind of looks like a topographic map, like a crazy little map. And by referencing the photo, I can see where I'm at.
Yeah.
There's a reference line. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense to me. So you're sort of up close to it, and I could see kind of like losing my, you know, where my place.
You've got it all inside a little hoop, which is only 8 inches, and you're trying to, you know, it's like, okay, where do I go now? What's the next?
So, am I on the neck? Am I on the collar?
Step away from it periodically.
Yeah. Well, they're just amazing. Your book is incredible. Now, you teach this, right?
I love to teach this. This is one of those classes where it's a little bit of work ahead of time because people need to send me their photographs ahead of time. Love to make it a two-day class because it's a lot of information for one day. Very successful. In fact, some of the photographs in the book and in the gallery part of the book are for my students, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, that is neat. Do you have a teaching schedule on your website?
I do not, but I do have openings towards the end of 2016.
Okay. All right. So that's in territope.com, TERITOPE.com. So you can be contacted there. And I do want to ask you one. We have a theme, and I know that you like laughed at me when I asked you this, but our theme is storage and solutions and stuff.
Well, I probably have at least five friends out there laughing right now also because I am definitely the world's messiest quilter. I mean, they joke about me at retreat because I encroach on their spaces and, you know, I tend to spread out. I'm a very creative, messy person. But what I love to do is before I start a project, I clean my space. I clean my sewing room. I put everything back where it's supposed to be. I clean out my sewing machine. I change my needle on my sewing machine. Everything's in its place, so then when I get in the middle of the craziness of designing or of actually stitching, it kind of, at least in the beginning, stayed where it was supposed to stay. So as far as fabric storage and where to put anything, yeah, I'm not your girl. No.
No, okay. Well, that's good to know. You know, we know everybody has their strong points, and so...
I know where it all is.
That's right. You know where it is. That's all right. And people that like to work like that, you do know where it is. And the other people just shut the door,
yeah.
Right?
They're thoroughly confused. But it's organized chaos. I mean, you know, I do clean it up periodically so that I can then find what I need. I tend to keep projects in bins too, you know, if I have to revisit it, or especially if I'm teaching it. So I have, you know, I might have 12 of one tool because they're in separate bins so that I can just grab that and take that with me to class. I mean, organizing all the supplies for that project has saved me a lot of time and hassle.
Well, that's a good idea to repeat, even though some of them, you know, because some tools are not very expensive, so you could easily repeat them. Yeah. Good tip. See, you have a storage tip.
That helped a little bit.
Well, Terry, this has been so much fun. Your book is truly amazing, and I hope to see some of those quilts in person someday.
I've got a couple of shows coming up. They'll be in the shows.
Okay, thank you.
We'll
be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. When I see something that uses pre-cuts, I get very excited because they have been around a long time. There's lots of different sizes. And anytime I can find a great way to use them and share that with you is a good day. So I've got author and designer and online teacher now, Angela Pingle, here to talk to me about using pre-cuts. Hi, Angela. How are you?
Good. Hi, Pat. I'm doing well.
I'm so glad to chat with you again. We haven't chatted for a little while.
Right.
When did you first encounter a pre-cut? Did you sort of, you know, enjoy them when they were first released, or did it take a little while?
I worked on them for a long time, a number of years now, good, you know, 7+ years. I don't know exactly when they started releasing, but I did a lot with Moda Bake Shop. In the day. So I actually won their Moda Bake Shop's Life competition. And I used to put a lot of patterns out for them. So I got very comfortable with the idea of designing for a pre-cut size. Yeah.
So
like them.
Yeah, you'll like them. Yes.
Yeah, like them. Yeah. They're pretty.
So,
I like them.
why do you, what is the advantage of them? What is the advantage of buying something that's already cut up for us?
Oh, I'd say bottom line, the main advantage is that you get an entire fabric line and you get a little snippet of everything. And you can decide what kind of snippet you want. So if you want a strip of it or a square of it or a chunk of it, you can, you know, that will determine what kind of pre-cut you want. But I would say that's the main advantage. And then, if you learn to sew with the particular size you've chosen, then of course you also can potentially skip a step of that initial cutting. So there's a couple key advantages there that draws me to it.
I like the variety too, that you can, it's hard to go out and necessarily a fabric line might be really large. You might not want to buy 38 pieces to get all the parts of it. So generally, the pre-cuts, several manufacturers carry them, and they're all similar. They have one piece from every fabric in the line, right?
Yes, typically. Some will repeat something. It depends on how many pieces they like to include in their pre-cut bundles. Some will throw in solids that coordinate on occasion. And it just depends on how large each company makes their lines, you know, their collections, how many fabrics you're going to get in your pre-cut collection.
Yeah.
So they can vary widely.
Have you been collecting the little mini charms, the 2.5?
I have a bag. Yeah, I have a bag full of them. Because they were first handed out for promotional purposes, and then somebody wised up that everybody wanted them, so now people make them that way. And, I mean, that literally is, like, the tastiest little way to just get a bite of each piece of fabric. And, I like it even just for it. That's a great thing for swatches. If you want to know, gosh, am I going to like this line? You can order one of those little 2.5 square charm, whatever they're calling them, 2.5 inch square packs. And then you'll see the actual fabrics, actual colors. And I mean, clearly you're not getting, if it's got a huge repeat, you're not going to see the whole thing. But especially for those little tiny prints, you can see it and determine right away, you know, which fabrics are going to be the right ones for you. So it might even be a really economical way for you to buy if you have to purchase things like that online. If you're not able to see it in a store in person, which is true for a lot of us.
Right. I know. I think that's one of the best things about them is to use them for coordinating colors and getting just what you want. So you know exactly what you're dealing with. Now, you have this absolutely wonderful new class called Disappearing Blocks with Pre-Cuts. I just think it is fantastic.
No, thank you.
I just love the whole idea of it. I've done one quilt like that. And so explain what you mean by disappearing blocks.
A disappearing block is a really fancy way of saying that you make a block and then you cut it up and then you sew it back together. So it's taking our crazy culture ways of cutting up fabric and sewing it into tiny little designs and doubling that or tripling it by cutting it and sewing it and then cutting it, sewing it. I do double disappearing blocks as well. So you, where you yeah. do it again.
Nuts, aren't we? Sometimes I think we quilters are just nuts.
I know, we're funny. We're like, let's take this giant piece of fabric and make it smaller and cut it to other smaller things. And then, so what disappearing blocks are is, I've made a beautiful block. I really like it. Now I'm going to chop that up and I'm going to re-sew it back together and see what I get.
Yeah, when you're re-sewing it.
To start with pre-cut, yeah.
So you're shuffling them and then.
I am.
Yeah, okay. And so what is the best way when you're dealing with this? And I'm sure your class tells a lot about this, but can you give me a tip or two? What is the best way to organize it for the shuffling and sewing back so that you get something unexpected?
Yeah, I do talk a lot about this in the class, particularly in the last session, because there are a number of things you want to consider when you're looking. It's going to depend very much on the pattern that you're doing and the scale of the fabrics that you're using. So you want to look for things. You may deliberately not do this, but in general, we're looking for things that are fairly high contrast, mm-hmm. so we can see the design sharply because you've done all this work. And other things we're looking for are patterns that it works really well with solids, but you may want to work with tonal patterns or basically a pattern that doesn't have too many colors in it where your eye can't see the work that you did.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that's going to vary widely on which type of disappearing block you're doing. You have more or less freedom with that depending on how complicated a block you're going to work on. Strips, you can get away with a lot, for instance, because the shape is very simple that you cut them up into.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Some of the other ones actually end up, you know, when you do diamonds and, you know, you just, your eye can't be moving in too many places. So you've got to give it a place to rest. So it's either with the pattern, you give mm-hmm. your eye a place to rest, or it's with the fabric design itself. So you kind of got to pick one or the other.
You know, I think that's an excellent tip because what happens is I see people who've, you know, played with a project, any kind of quilting project, and if there's not enough contrast, then you
right.
lose all your work.
Right. And some people do that deliberately when they want to show off maybe an ombre effect, or they just want to be able, sometimes you want to do that to deliberately blend in one color to another. You don't want to see where the seams are. Mm-hmm. So I have some tips for that in the class as well. But yeah, in general, you don't want to be doing a super complicated block then, because it's just not worth it. I mean, my mind, it's just not worth it, but everybody's got their own cup of tea they like.
Right. No, and I think people want to know how to make something like that successful because you start working on it and you have a vision in your brain, but you know how sometimes it doesn't come out of the machine the way you're hoping. That's like,
oh yeah. So I actually deliberately have a couple of samples that I go through where I've made a block maybe four times, and I show you, I like this one. This one's okay. This one I could get away with. This one's disastrous. And it wasn't because I sewed it incorrectly. It was just because of how the fabrics ended up working together. And they're lovely fabrics on their own.
Right.
In fact, it was my favorite fabric that worked the least for the block I was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it had no bearing on the design of either the pattern or the fabric design.
Well,
it's just a matter of choosing the right thing for the right project.
And I think that's really powerful example for people to see is the same thing done in different ways where you can obviously see then which works best for your eye and doesn't. Because you can talk about it, but unless you're visualize, you know, see it, it's really difficult.
It's huge. Yeah. Because they were ones I wasn't expecting. I mean, I didn't make them expecting that they would be awful. They just turned out that way. So let's use this as a learning point.
Yes. This will be for class. That's
right.
Yes. We'll just keep this
totally
one for class.
Revealing all my secrets.
That's right. That's great. So people can find your class at Craftsy. It's called Disappearing Blocks with Pre-Cuts. And I wanted to switch gears because we have about 2 minutes. Tell me a little bit about you have a great storage solution that you've gone to with folding your fabric. Tell me about that.
I do. So I make no claims that I came up with this, but I've been doing it for a long time now, and I have a tutorial on my blog for how to do this. But I use comic book boards, and I wrap all of my yardage on that, anything roughly a half yard or more, mm-hmm. I wrap on them. And the comic book boards are great because these are the pieces of cardboard that they put in the plastic with comic books to keep the comic books in shape for all these people who are collectors. Mm. So they've done, you know, it's acid-free paper. It's everything you would want your fabric to be wrapped on. So we like that about the product itself. And then I like it because when I wrap my fabric, then I'm able to, and I pin it in place. And you can, again, there's a tutorial if you really want to see a visual for this. But when I put it on my shelf, I'm looking at it right now, and it looks like I'm looking at a bookcase. So it mm-hmm. looks like a bunch of bookends, and I can just see all of my fabric, and I have it out, and I can see very clearly that I have a lot of aqua, that is definitely where all my, because I color coded too. So, you know, I'm able to see for sure how much fabric I have instead of having big piles, because that's just a little bit harder for me to figure out what I have. And this way I can sort of, in the way that you would pull a book off the shelf at the library, I can pull a fabric off my shelf and try it out and audition it with other fabrics, and then I can slide it back in. And it just works really well. And it's very pretty to look at. So I look very organized. And it's also, for me, it's a very efficient way to go. So it does take some time to sit down and wrap them around. But, you know, just grab yourself a good movie, and don't be shocked when you think you've bought enough comic book boards and you end up having to double or triple that amount.
Right. That's what I hear a lot.
It's the first time you'll be like, but I thought I only had 100 fabrics.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you don't.
Right. Order up some more of those boards.
Yes. And you can find those on Amazon or in any comic book store. And it's always really fun to go into the comic book stores and tell them you're buying it for your fabric collection.
Right.
So. Well, varying reactions to that.
Yes. Well, that'd be the fun part. Just see what happens. Well, Angela, this has been great. I have learned some interesting things today. And I'm just very excited about your class. I think people will love it. There's just a fun way to use pre-cuts.
Yes, it really is.
And you can visit Angela at cuttopieces.blogspot.com. And I am so happy that you're joining me here at our podcast. Visit allpeoplequilt.com for American Patchwork and Quilting. And you can visit me at my website, patsloan.com. Both of us have newsletters, and we're all on Facebook hanging out, chatting. So we will come back next week with a brand new show, and we'll see you then.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.